That was our very own Armidale Pipe Band, and I'm so grateful to Mike Cregan, who's with me here in this studio, for bringing those in. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. How are you?
Mike, you're the drum major.
Correct.
Of the Armidale Pipe Band, and you've got a pretty important announcement that's part of the reason you're in the studio with me today. We might just talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the main reason for coming in, and thank you for speaking with me, is that the Pipe Band is having an information night this coming Monday the 20th of March at 6 p.m. in the Johnston Hall, which is in Faulkner Street across from the Centennial Park. The band is always looking for new members, and some time ago we had an information night, and there are a lot of people who were on the border saying, oh, maybe I might like to join a band or learn the pipes or drums or something, and never really got that thing called around to it. So what we're doing is trying to make contact with those people to say, look, if you've ever thought about it, come along and find out what we can do. The main sort of things that people want to know is that we provide the pipes, the drums, the uniform, but more importantly, the tuition. And we sometimes get people who are very musically competent with other instruments and can already read music, but we've already had a number of people who have had no musical training whatsoever, and we take them from scratch. So wherever your interest is, we'd like to see you and talk with you, or if Monday night's not convenient, make contact with us, and we're happy to have a one-on-one meeting. So that's the purpose of me coming in, but apparently Margaret would like to ask me a couple of questions about some other parts, other aspects of the band.
Look, the Pipe Band is always evident at our big events in town, at the Autumn Festival. I don't dare say you'll be there.
We will, yes.
In splendour, and of course more sombre times like Anzac Day. And you're just so much a part of the furniture in a way that it's easy perhaps not to think about the origin of the Scottish influence in Australia. How did all these pipe bands, I mean, there's a pipe band in probably every major community, I would think, but a little bit of the background is that Scots were a very, very big part of the initial migration to Australia in the 19th century.
Correct. The Scots, the Irish, the English did emigrate to around the world, but particularly to America, Canada and Australia, New Zealand, whatever. But in terms of coming back to Armidale, there was a reasonably large Scottish contingent that came and settled in the area. They did actually like the cooler climate. And I acknowledge Darrell Fisher, who was our pipe major at one stage, who did a lot of research about the history of the Armidale Band and put together a PowerPoint presentation and a booklet. Now, the earliest evidence that we can find of a pipe band playing, performing in Armidale was about 1901. And that was a group, a Caledonian group, who had a Scottish ball band. And they invited this group of pipers to come along and practice for that ball. And ever since then, there has been a band in Armidale. There was a recession about 1984 to 1995, somewhere around there, where just through lack of interest, lack of numbers, everyone being so busy or not having new members come through, the band just folded. All the instruments and uniforms were packed into storage. And there was one of those information sessions. Now, I was one of the people who went along to that. I can bash out a bit of a tune on a couple of instruments, none very well, and can just read basic music, very, very basic. But there was a number of people who started at that time, and there's a couple of those people who were even still in the band. So I learned to play the pipes, very basic. I can probably knock out a couple of the basic tunes, but I'm not practicing the pipes that much these days. There are very what's the right term, complicated or cantankerous instrument, they need to be played regularly.
Mm, well, I mean, they're an organic instrument, aren't they? What the, of course, we're talking about the bagpipe, which forms the main section a lot, but the drums are very much a part of it as well.
Correct.
But the bagpipe is made of
well, originally it was made out of, well, an animal skin, and even, you know, 30 years ago, even the Australian kangaroo skin was favoured as the bag. Oh. The Australian kangaroo hide is very dense, and therefore it holds the air in, and what you'd have to do is what they call season the bag. You'd have to take all the stocks off and put this mixture, which everyone had their own recipe, but it was basically...
The stocks being the pipe.
The stocks being, yep. yes, the blowpipe, the chanter, which has got the holes in it at the bottom, and the three drones at the top. You'd take them out, plug them with a cork, put this seasoning in and rub it in around everywhere you could to make it airtight. Because it is a reasonably, you know, effort to get that pipe up and keep it going. So if you're losing air out of the bag or through a stock that's leaking, you have to blow so much harder to keep the same consistency. The bagpipe's got to be kept at the constant pressure. If you're playing another reed instrument...
Great for the lungs.
Yes, very good. Very good. Very
good.
And you don't have to be a big person to play the pipes. We have some smaller children and women, so you can get different sizes of the bag to suit your own physical physique. And the other thing you can do is the chanter reed. Now, the chanter's the tube thing at the bottom with all the holes in it that you put your fingers on, which changes the note. In that is a cane reed.
Like a piece of cane, just
like an oboe or a saxophone, whatever. And you can get reeds with different strengths. So if you're not a very strong blower, you can get a weak reed. The problem is that if a person with a strong set of lungs tries to blow that, it would what they call gurgle. It just sounds, you know,
amazing.
You know, yeah. And vice versa, if a person who is not a really strong blower tried to play a set of pipes with a really strong reed, they would have great difficulty at least getting the bag up and keeping that constant. You have to have that constant pressure. With a number of instruments like the oboe, the saxophone, whatever, you can blow harder to make the note of the pitch of the
higher.
Note go higher,
yep.
or you can have what they call a rest where there's no sound and then you come back in with the note, whereas the bagpipe has got to be kept constant.
So just talking about that, Mike, there's the drone and that's a constant sound.
Yes, there's three what they call drones. One of the pitch of them are all tuned to A.
Right.
At one stage they're all tuned to the concert piano, which is 444 kilohertz.
Right.
So if you go into a concert piano and hit A, you would tune to that. But most pipe bands tune much higher than that now.
Interesting.
It's because there's much better bags, much more airtight bags.
So take it, a modern bagpipe would be made of a manufactured fabric.
It's a synthetic material. There's two or three main brands. I've got one of these synthetic types as well. You don't have to season them, and every so often you air test them. You take out your drones, put in corks, blow it up, and just see how long it will stay full.
Yeah.
Or the other technique used to be is to shove it in a bath of water or something and just see if there's any bubbles coming anywhere.
Yeah.
But within each of those drones, and the big tall one is tuned to A, and the tenor ones are also tuned to A, but it's an octave higher. And then your chanter is also tuned to so that you hit the A in that. There's two A's on the chanter so that they resonate and harmonise with those notes. So that's why you need a good
drone,
pipe major who to tune the pipes. Now, we've all become not lazy, but become taking advantage of technology. For $20 or so, you can buy now a tuner, and it's a little electronic meter that tells you whether your each of your drones are high or low, sharp or flat. Mm-hmm. And by adjusting them, you can sort of get them all to harmonise, because there's nothing better than sounds like a good tuned set of pipes.
Mm.
And I'm sure there's lots and lots of jokes about, you know, people playing a set of pipes that's not tuned properly. In fact, some people say that, you know, the RSPCA can be called to say you're trying to squeal a cat or, you know, skin a cat or something.
No, but, I don't believe that. I think it's one of the most fabulous sounds.
Yeah, it's a very stirring instrument.
Mm.
And certainly the mass bands too. It's just another dimension. I've been privileged enough to play in a couple of big mass bands and also lead a couple of mass bands.
Mm.
And to stand out the front and give those commands and just to hear the massive roar of those drums cutting in, and then the first when the pipe bag the drones come in. Mm. I'm even getting goosebumps. Yeah. Now talking about, and the noise, you also have to be a little bit cautious. They can put out a big sound up to 120 decibels, so hearing protection is recommended, and particularly with the children.
Yes.
We do stress that, you know, best to protect your hearing and make sure there's no hearing loss. Yeah.
So if you wore some hearing protection, you'd still obviously be able to hear the music.
Oh, yes, and, yes. They're still loud enough to hear, but not to do any damage to the eardrum.
Oh.
But so we have a couple of young learners at the moment. In fact, it's great. Over since the time that I've been in the band, we have had the privilege, and I say it's a privilege, of training a number of drummers and pipers. But then Armidale, being even though it's a lovely town to grow up and we've got great educational facilities,
we certainly do, yeah.
A lot of those people have ended up moving out for work purposes or to do other study in other universities or other places. We have also on the other side picked up a few people. University who may be trained at somewhere like Scots College or whatever,
yeah,
and going to uni here, but a lot of our functions don't sit within the university term, so that's why we're always looking for new people. We do play at a large number of functions over the year and a lot of festivals. Some of those festivals out of town, we've even been down to country music, Celtic festival in Glen Ennis is another very good one. Grafton Jacaranda Festival.
Mm.
So we do get around, not too much, but
there's a fabulous one down in the Hunter, Upper Hunter, isn't
there? Aberdeen. That's another very popular one.
I think that's called the Highland
Gathering.
Games.
Yeah, or the Highland Gathering.
And that I've been to that. And also the gathering at McLean. And
yes, that the Easter McLean Festival is particularly big. And that's where our band has won, certainly on a number of occasions, the best band on parade. In other words, of the sometimes even up to 30 bands marching in the morning.
It's an amazing sight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a sort of early morning with the steam coming up on the next to the Clarence River. It's and then the mass band up in the showground.
Yeah.
It's and then they have a full day of activity.
Not only that, what I think is amazing is I did tease you before we came on that you'd won the best hack if you were horses, you'd be. But you really do have the most gorgeous uniform. I understand it's a Seaforth Mackenzie.
Mackenzie of Seaforth.
Right.
And the history of that, a little bit of trivia.
Before you do that, I just want to describe it for people that just, I don't know, there may be some listeners out there who haven't seen you perform, but it's a magnificent black watch, I think.
It's the green, green with the light green, red, and yellow through it.
Mm.
And the broad history of the tartans is that if you have a green tartan, you tend to be more from the Highlands, more.
Wow.
And if you've got the red tartans, which are more the Stuart and Campbell, you tend to be more around the coastal area.
Yeah,
but the story is that when the band was forming back in 1901, maybe it might have taken a couple of years for them to be able to afford the uniform.
I've got to say the drummers have an absolutely magnificent red coat.
Yes, with the red coat.
Gorgeous epaulettes and on their shoulders and brass buttons and braiding. It's really fabulous.
Yeah. They approached a tartan manufacturer down in Sydney and they said, oh, well, we've got some tartan. We've got a roll of tartan here that hasn't been taken. We can give that to you for a bargain. So being of Scottish background, that's how they chose the tartan. But
it's a magnificent tartan, yeah. And it certainly suits us because, you know, obviously in Australia we're the high country.
Yes, it can be very hot. I wear the full outfit. I try to wear the full outfit on most occasions.
Now, you're the drum major.
Major.
Now, I've got to describe. I've got a photograph here which we'll put up on our website.
Yes.
So the drum major, you have the spats.
Yes,
which is the white overlay over the black shoes. And then you've got a diagonally striped red sock with black diagonal stripes on it that goes up to your knees.
Yep.
Then you've got an amazingly large
sporran is the front cover. That was sort of quite often like a purse where you'd carry
your
money and stuff and whatever. So it's now become symbolic. They are horsehair. If you get a traditional one, although a number of bands have gone to a synthetic material, but horsehair. And then that large thing that goes over my shoulder is called a plaid. And that is basically like a shawl. You know, when it gets cold, you wrap that around you to keep the cold out.
But it looks fabulous from the back.
Yes. And when there's a wind.
And when there's a wind, it flies up in a, you know, magnificent tartan, you know, spray of tartan, if you like. And then, of course, you've got this fabulous red jacket with very fancy shoulder epaulettes on the shoulder. And you have a silver, a very elaborate cane or...
a mace, you call it.
A mace.
And the mace is the symbol of authority. But also when the band's marching, they can't hear you, so you use the mace to give signals to start, to stop, to turn, to mark time.
Because they've got earplugs in and they're playing like mad.
Yeah.
So you need to give them visual signals with the mace.
Correct.
Which is this long, elaborate stick with this gorgeous silver ball.
So when they open Parliament, they have a mace. The mace is the symbol of you have the authority.
That's right. Yeah.
And earlier when we were chatting, you said, what's the drum major? How did they get that term?
Yep.
So the origin of the drum major and why they have four stripes is that on a battlefield, again, where you could not hear or did not have communication radios and blah, 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 they would have the drums, and the person controlling a battle on the field would give signals, and those signals would be communicated in drums. Mm. And that might mean advance, halt, the left flank, horses, cavalry go in, hold the infantry. So the drum major was the important communication person from the general or the person controlling the battle to make sure that the right signals were given to the given to the army. So in
say the battle of, well, I don't know if the battle of Culloden was fought with.
I think they were just civilians. I don't think they were an organised army.
But in an organised fight or army attack, what was the function of the pipers and the drummers?
As I said, to start off with, the drummers used to sort of beat out the commands or even beat retreats and these type things.
Yep.
But certainly First World War and to some extent the Second World War, battles that were still fought on a battlefield, there were pipers who would just hop up, blow the pipes up, and start marching with the infantrymen.
Right.
And to hear them on a big open field, you know, the enemy, if you haven't heard bagpipes, apparently just used to be in terror. What is this squealing noise that we have not heard? And there's been a number of pipers who have been awarded the VC, you know, just for their bravery of standing up and walking into open fire.
Yeah.
But the morale, apparently, for the infantry of the, you know, the Anzacs, and to hear that pipe thing. It just gave them a lot of courage. There's also another joke. I often tell a few jokes too. They say, why is a bagpiper often walking? And they say it's a harder target for someone to hit them. But anyway, that's another little thing. But so that's the pipes of... I've got a very long history with the military aspect. Most Air Force, Navy and the Army have their own pipe bands. And pipe bands are used a lot within ceremonial type situations. Certainly,
there was a magnificent piper, I think, at the Queen's funeral.
Yes, yes.
That was just so moving.
Yes, and that's where they are also used in a requiem situation, funerals. There was a particular tune called Flowers of the Forest, or another one called Going Home, which just, they're very typical and traditional. Also, the pipe band is approached on numerous occasions. Can they please provide a piper or a small contingent to play at a wedding or funerals, as we just mentioned, or even birthday parties? Or just having a big party, would you like a piper, you know? Like, and all of that's done on a volunteer-type basis. We don't sort of have a set fee and say, oh, well, but sometimes some people might ask for a contribution if there's travel or accommodation involved. But in your opening remarks, we are a very proactive band. We do a lot for the community, and I think the community does a lot for us. We're also very lucky to have a very good quartermaster, Donna Daly, who just keeps us looking so fantastic and keeps control of who's got what uniform.
That would be so important.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And it costs easy, maybe $2,500, $3,000 to fit out a person in that Highland outfit. And that's, we don't wear that Highland outfit all the time. We have a summer uniform and then we have a...
Yes, because you're saying it's very hot. The clothing, of course, you'd expect it coming from the very far, far north of Europe.
Oh, it's great on a cold day. But well, particularly down at, say, for Jacaranda Festival, I have to be so careful that I only put on, and even that bear hat, you know, the what they call the Busby.
We didn't get us, we got to the jacket, but we didn't get to the that tall beefeater sort of hat.
They were bearskins, but of, you know, they haven't used the bearskin for many, many years, but now they use ostrich feathers. Emu feathers, I think it is. They look the same, but even the heat in that hat. So I only put, even keep my jacket unbuttoned and only put it on at the last minute, and I have to watch that I watch my heat, you know, and make sure I don't get a heat stroke. So, but, you know, the...
But you've now got a summer uniform.
Yes, yes. The summer uniform is a light blue shirt. And then we also have a jacket as well that, you know, again, looks very formal and very thing. So we dress to whatever the situation is. And then there's a T-shirt. So, so if anyone is thinking of maybe joining the band, and we also have just, probably call them just friends of the band. There's a couple of people who are not playing members in any way. But when we go to some of the festivals like the Jacaranda Festival or the Celtic Festival, we put them on the email list, and if they'd like to come and join us, they pay a small fee. It might be $5, $10 for the bus fare, just contribute to the bus fare. And they come along for the day and just watch the marches, see the events, the sporting things.
To cheer squad and help us.
Yes, yeah, so we have another couple of group of people. We call them gillies.
Okay.
And they specifically help us get dressed. Well, I want to keep that in the right sort of context. But, you know, just to make sure that our socks are the right way, our sporrans are in the centred. To help you put on the plaid, which is a two-person job. How they used to do that going into battle or take it off in the afternoon or whatever. But so, yeah, we call those ladies gillies, just helpers, you know. And sometimes they have working bees, where they just check the uniforms, you know, if their buttons need a shirt needs a button on it, or there's a little bit of a hole developed in one of the socks, or, you know, just to keep, because, again, we're the envy of many bands at many of these competitions because we all look so good.
We've all got
the right hats.
I'm looking at a big photograph, which we will put on our website with Mike's consent, just showing how taken on the steps of the old Teachers College on
Anzac Day. Yeah,
Anzac Days, and look, honestly, just fabulous looking outfit. Yeah,
right.
And it's good to know the technical sort of the techniques behind keeping everybody. I have to say, one of the things that I find quite thrilling is when you go to these Celtic events, you'll see bystanders and everyday people, and especially if in the case of a Highland Games, you'll see these really very gorgeous looking men just sort of with a casual sort of kilt on, and it really gives you a sense of the athleticism and the freedom that a kilt gives a man or a woman, I suppose, you know, just kind of freedom of their legs and arms, and they're just, it's just such an athletic outfit.
Yes,
as well.
Mm. And particularly the Aberdeen Games and to the Celtic Festival at some stage, the Highland Games, like the tossing of the caber, just the amount of strength and skill to toss that caber.
The caber's like an enormous log.
It's like a big telegraph pole.
Yes, or very much longer than the length of a human.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. But the strength to even lift it up, balance it, and then to toss it, and the accuracy or the straightness of the toss, that's what we've judged on. But then
it's
these
like
other
a javelin made of shot put balls.
Yeah.
It's a big log. It's a log sort of thing.
There is a hammer type event as well, where they do sort of spin it around and throw it. There's another one where they have a
discus sort of thing.
A discus type thing, yeah. Mm. There's another one where they have a bag of chaff, which is a set weight, and a pitchfork, and they have to throw that over like a high jump.
Yep.
And then there's others where there's massive big stone balls. They have to lift them up from the ground and put them on a wine keg. They carry these two other large pieces of steel. So, yeah, the sheer strength of those guys.
Well, I mean, you can see the relationship of that to everyday life in times gone by, perhaps. Yeah. But, I mean, I remember rafting down a river and there was nobody in our party. I got stuck on one side, the rest of the party, I was the Franklin River down in Tasmania. If we'd have had somebody who knew how to chuck a caber, I would have been fine. And all those sort of highland streams and things, you can imagine people having to be able to throw over streams and rivers, and then lifting balls of shot to load cannons and they all would have, and of course the pitchforking hay, it all relates back to life as it was lived for centuries.
Yeah. And years ago I actually went through Scotland and went over the top and went through Braemar, where the Highland Games are held there.
Yep.
And this is where people wear kilts and, you know, play pipes just because they're Scottish. And
that used to be part of their everyday thing,
you know, they might have been doing it for the tourist as well.
But yeah.
But in years gone by, every clan had their own piper, you know, and that's where the history to be chosen as the piper of a particular clan. Mm. And then they used to have their own little competitions to see who could create a new tune or play tunes, and then their bands formed, and so it has got a great history, the pipes and drums.
Oh yeah, and it was also political. The tartans were banned for many years when the English took over Scotland.
Correct.
Getting those tartans back and all the history in each and every design.
Correct.
We've now got a koala tartan, did you know, in Australia?
Yes, I've heard that, and there is actually an Australian tartan. It's a khaki tartan, and it's worn by the regimental army. Whatever, but just on that freedom thing, I, as the drum major, wear three weapons. One is a full ceremonial sword. Another one is a short sword called a dirk.
Yep.
And that's worn on the hip. And then there's a skidoo, which is worn in the sock, which is a very short sword. And the history of that is the Scottish, and the English. Oh. The English were trying to take over and prevent the Scots from doing things and banning them from wearing tartans and certain other things. So the freedom to bear arms is very important, and the freedom sort of thing, which has probably been made popular by Braveheart, and so there's a further history there as well, within the colours and the tartans, and there used to be wars fought over tartans and who was allowed to wear them and who was granted a tartan. Mm. So there is a wealth of history there, but look, for the average person who likes the pipe music, and all the drums, you know, we've had a number of young people. Mm. They can even though we have what we call a half drum. I'm not quite sure how many kilos a side drum carries, but for some, a very small person, that can be a bit onerous. So we have what they call a half drum. So the person can learn or start learning on what we call a pad, which is just literally a round piece of rubber. To learn it, and then when they get big enough, strong enough, they can start carrying a drum and start
marching and thing. Parade. Yeah,
in this other military band I used to be in, I can play the tenor drum and spin the sticks, and can also play the bass drum as well if need be. I could play certain side drum tunes, but none of the Scottish rudiments or what they. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I hope that's. Enough if anyone out there who's thinking of maybe coming and joining the band in some way, shape or form, please make contact with us. We've got a website and a Facebook page, and there's a phone number, 6772-5534. I'll just repeat those last four digits, 5534. So if anyone wants to have a chat, or they're not available on that Monday night and would like to make contact with us, just please do. We'd love to hear from you.
And look, the other thing I would think is that by the look of these photographs, there's a lot of social sort of... The band is a bit like a... Well, I imagine it's a bit like a family, is it?
Well, that's amazing you mentioned that term, family. There's a lot of people who have made lifetime friends,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
For some people, depending upon their other commitments and whatever, but for some people, there's lots of them who actually do form their own little groups and have their own little outings and coffees and practice. And some people just like to get together and play, you know. In fact, I often hear people say, oh, I heard someone playing up the top of the Lookout or, you know, another park. Who would that be?
I guess this is something you may well have to touch on Monday night. Where do you practice? I know that I live on the edge of Armidale, and for a few years we had a neighbour about four houses away.
Yeah.
And these are big blocks.
Yeah.
Clearly the daughter was learning the bagpipes, because this most exquisite sound. Sometimes, I think she might have been restricted to after 7 a.m.
Yes, yeah.
But, beautiful sound of her practicing it, but you could hear it.
Yeah. Even Glen Ennis, for example, they paid a piper to come and play at 12 o'clock every day on their town hall balcony.
Oh,
so that was just a great tourist attraction, or people walking in the street and just hearing the pipes playing like that.
Yeah.
We have floated the idea.
We could do that, because our city is named after a Scottish castle. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm. And even our Armidale, where they misspelt the, we should have an A in it, the same as Perth and Melbourne.
Victoria, yeah.
But we have the I in it. But yes, the Scottish heritage there. Yeah, I've travelled to 34 countries, and Scotland and Ireland and whatever, but I'm very proud of the Scottish background, and even when I was in Ireland, there's a lot of bands playing the pipes over there as well. But right around the world, you know, if you see a big gathering, there's nothing more stirring than to see a mass pipe band. Yeah, or even some of the big football games. In fact, I even worked for a wine and spirit company for a number of years, and they sponsored South Sydney, and they also had 100 Piper Scotch whiskey. So what they did was that they literally hired a number of bands to come together to have 100 Pipers and played at the first game at the South Sydney Stadium. And
How wonderful.
So when I attended some of the things like that, and they also hired a number of pipers, and they had a number of girls dressed up in mini kilts and trays of whiskey, and would go into the pubs and hand out drams of whiskey as a promotion. I don't think you'd be allowed to do that now.
No.
And then they'd have a piper dressed up in the full Highland outfit playing things. So that's where I've sort of, and even when I was in this cadet band at when it was De La Salle here in Armidale,
yeah,
we were the number one band in New South Wales in terms of trumpet and drums. But even down at Singleton where we were practicing, and I could hear the pipes, you know, Scots College and other pipe bands playing, I'd always want to go over and join them. So
yeah.
So I've certainly had the love of the pipes.
Yeah.
And I live out on acreage, and as I said, I'm not playing them quite often at the moment, but certainly when I do blow them up and tune them, and particularly on a cool night with a fog or drizzle, mist, then it makes you feel like going and having a small scotch or something. But but anyway, there's a great deal of history there.
Well, I mean, to be a piper or a drummer, or in your case a drum major, and there's also a pipe major, it's just a fabulous lifetime investment, I think, from what you're describing. And I don't think it matters where you're from. I mean, obviously, it's been it's part of the Anglo-Saxon sort of culture and the Celtic, more particularly the Celtic culture. But, I mean, it's just so much fun.
Yes.
Music, dressing up.
Yeah, well, we
and
certainly...
really contributing to your community.
Yeah, well, we certainly enjoy ourselves.
Yeah.
When we go to some of these festivals, because, you know, once you play your gig in the mass band, you are free to go around and have a look at all the exhibits or all the other events that are on. Sometimes that involves a pub meal or a beer or two, or just eat.
I think it's great for extroverts because they like to show off and be noticed, and it's really great for introverts as well because, you know, you really would have to force yourself in some ways. You can hide in the band, but afterwards in the uniform you're going to have to kind of learn how to be loud and proud a bit.
Yes.
So for either anybody, and I know that you're particularly keen to encourage anybody, but young people as well. And I notice in these magnificent photos you've got some very young keen members photographed as well, so mini pipers.
And age is not a barrier. We've had a number of, over the years, retired people who, what am I going to do now, come along, you know, it is better to learn the instrument when you're young and your fingers are more agile and whatever, but certainly the older people are fine, but it's all to do with attitude and enthusiasm and just be prepared to learn and to join in and play at whatever level you're at.
So, Mike, how long would you think it would take to learn the bagpipes sufficient to perform in a parade?
Okay, it depends on the person, of course, and how much time.
You can save that question for the Monday night session.
And how much time they've got to actually prepare and practice all the we call grace notes and things like that.
Yeah.
But if an average, putting it all together and say an average person who comes along to the practice each night and prepared to put in, you know.
So you practice once a week.
Once a week, yes. And then to do, you know, 15, 20 minutes a couple of times a week. They could be playing a very simple tune like Amazing Grace a number of months, you know, like 6 months, 3 months.
Yeah.
And then marching in the band with a, you know, 10, 15 tunes, maybe a year or 18 months. But it all comes back to their commitment. But they're, we don't drive them. We take them at their level and their ability, because a young person too has to, their fingers have to be a certain length to play the chanter, because the chanter is only one octave plus one note. And it's at a set size, so you can't make a smaller one for a person with shorter fingers or smaller fingers. So they have to be at a stage where they can spread their fingers out. But like, that's a very, how long's a piece of string?
But those are the technical questions that you'll no doubt be discussing at the meeting.
But it's
on
certainly
Monday
not
night.
Onerous. Years and years and years.
No,
We can get them in, and also what we
tend to do for people who are sort of getting involved and learning, we also, to get them in the band and marching, we get them to hold the banner at the front and march with us.
Yeah.
So they get a feel as if they're in the band and the band sees that. And but it does become a commitment. And even then, people are not forced to come along to any event. Every time there is a forthcoming event, we put up a sheet to say, are you available, who's available, and how many, what the band size is going to be. But and then we get a request for someone to go along to a wedding, you know.
Yeah.
So it's very commitment, you do what you want.
Oh, it sounds really wonderful, Mike. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing all that with us. And just to recap, I'm going to play another number tune. From the music you've brought in, but I just want to reiterate the time.
The information session is this coming Monday, the 20th, 6 p.m. at Johnston Hall in Faulkner Street, across from Central Park. So,
Johnston Hall. Is that?
It's next to the Presbyterian church, and it's also just down from Kent House.
All right. So it's between Kent House, which a lot of people know, opposite Central Park, and
the Presbyterian church.
And the Presbyterian church. Fantastic. Well, I don't know what we're going to get here because the CD is in my deck, so we'll just play this. That was the High Road to Gerlach
and Murray's Wedding.
So if you want to be your very own piper, if you could take on engagements, there's plenty of opportunity for that, but more particularly the Armidale Pipe Band is recruiting. And thank you so much, Mike, for coming in and joining us and sharing the music with us. Absolutely fabulous, especially in our country, I just wanted to read this before you go, Mike. A little bit of local information from this great booklet that you've brought in. Wallamumbi, just out of Armidale, was known as Scott's Corner in the 1870s because four-fifths of the early settlers in that area came from the highlands of Scotland, Rossia, and that was the Finlaysons, the McLennans. I mean, don't we all still know wonderful Finlaysons, McLennans, McRae's, McDonald's, Fraser's, Cameron's and McAllister's, settling at places that they named Glengarry, Tulloch, Kilcoy, Achill, I think, and Fassafern. So, look, we're surrounded by this, so why not indulge in the gorgeous music as well? And thank you so much, Mike, for coming in.